Hunger, actually, they're supposed to, they want to make themselves as the, at least like the Web3 hub for, yeah, for the world, at least for APAC.
Yeah.
But I mean, from the regulatory side, it's moving, I mean, it's restricted. They actually, they cannot make decisions, right? We all know about that.
I think they're very slow.
They're restricted. Yeah.
I think they're very slow.
What's your view? I mean, what's your view from like a Cho-Fi perspective? Hong Kong was, has been, and now also, oh, I see. We are here. I will bring him up. Also a finance hub now, but as for crypto, I don't know.
It's relatively new, so they don't know how to regulate it or promote it or build it. Hey, William.
Hello, hello.
Nice to meet you.
Good to meet. Check, check.
Hi, William. How are you?
Great, happy.
Can you just share with us that President Trump signed the executive order of making, yeah, what's it? Capital of Bitcoin or something?
Making America. The Bitcoin and and crypto capital of the world, apparently.
What's your view on this, William?
You mean the one from right after the inauguration?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was, you can see that he had very good connections in the industry right when he started.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, and as you can see with the people that bought the NFT that he had.
Right.
You know, this was a good connection, and with his drop right before the inauguration.
Right.
So he has good industry connections, and the executive order, I think, was very basic, didn't really do much,
right.
But it did say that it was a signaling thing.
Right.
But he has followed through. So he has said, I mean, you have to read more than the order. You have to read what he's doing more than just what the order says, because there's limits on what he can put in an order, right?
Yeah.
But the U.S. has an interest in increasing Bitcoin without spending money on the Bitcoin.
Right.
I think this is really big impact, even though it sounds stupid.
No.
So, I mean, it sounds stupid. It's like, how is the executive going to get Bitcoin without spending any money? Because they're not allowed to spend money, right?
Right.
That's the Congress's job. So the answer is, they just take the assets that they've already seized and put them into a centralized wallet.
Right.
That's huge. That's very huge, because it's a trust signal and it shows that they are thinking of these things as assets. So
right.
Previously, if you had a drug dealer and you go arrest them and you take their car and you take this and that, well, they just hold onto your stuff. So if you have like a car, then they might sell it. If you have a bong, and you had a bunch of paraphernalia, they would just throw that away.
Right.
Well, guess what? And if you had cash, they would put the cash, you know, as you would forfeit that cash because
right.
It's related to drugs. But previously, if you had Bitcoin, they were treating the Bitcoin like the bong. They would just, it would be useless. It would just sit there. Nobody would have any interest in it. And they would basically just dispose of it or auction it off later.
Mm-hmm.
Now they think of it more like cash. They think of it as a strategic asset. I think that's
right.
How you need to look at this executive order. And it's really how it reclassifies and it shows the value of Bitcoin.
Having said that, recently there's a news in Southeast Asia, I think it's Burma or Myanmar. This criminal, right? This young guy, he runs an illegal operation in Southeast Asia, just try to cheat people's money, right? So he owns a lot of Bitcoin, right? And apparently, for some reason, the American government can confiscate all his Bitcoins. And I think he's getting arrested as well for all that illegal operation that he runs. So I was wondering, right? I don't know the details. How you confiscate his Bitcoins, though? Like, you just take it away from him, from his wallet?
Easy. Because what he has is not Bitcoin. What he has is an exchange account.
Oh,
he's not your asset.
So he's just
custody.
Oh, so you ask exchange to to confiscate. Okay, got it. All right.
We're not giving criminal advice here, but you know,
No. I was just wondering. I was just thinking.
Amateur hour by this guy.
I was just thinking how.
No criminal advice.
I'm not a lawyer. Okay. All
right. Right. So I know, William, you only have 1 hour here. So I really want to make the best out of this 1 hour. Yeah, I think we don't have to wait for other audiences. They can listen to our record anyways. Yeah, I've sent the invite to a bunch of friends, but I think they're stuck somewhere. Okay, anyways, let's get started. And I'm so happy to have William here. And also hope you can join our future space as well.
Thank you.
And quick introduction of Block Central. It is a social space for TrollFi and DeFi professionals, devs, and investors to explore the future of money. Okay, so since you mentioned there's no criminal advice, I would give a disclaimer before we start our conversation. Okay, let me read this. Block Central is a public discussion space. The views and opinions expressed by speakers are their own and do not represent the position of Block Central, its hosts or partners, and also not a financial advice. Okay, great. How about William, you can give a brief introduction of yourself and before we dive into today's topic.
Great. So hi, everyone. My name is Will Entrekin, dialing in from Philadelphia, USA. I have been in blockchain space since 2017. Mm-hmm. My first project was getting involved with Ethereum Foundation and the Ethereum community, first to pass something called non-fungible tokens. So I'm the lead author of this paper.
All right.
Details and things that people use for making smart contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked with Ethereum Foundation to help bootstrap their basically dev relations function. Now we call it DevRel, that whole function, by making a really collaborative, inclusive way for people to make their own standards and to find each other to work on interoperable products, which is basically the whole point of blockchain. I've also proceeded to do this in other blockchain systems, such as Aeon, Tron, and I've worked as advisory. So I work on very specific projects for Bitcoin and our blockchain stuff, and usually with the idea of implementing them into some other big product. So my projects include like Louis Vuitton fraud prevention for their whatever goods that they want to make certificates of authenticity for. They've actually broken away and made their own blockchain since then. Other luxury goods, the pharmacies, Merck Animal Health has done basically a lot of projects. They want to use NFT for use cases completely unrelated to TradFi. So we're talking about supply chain and some of this stuff. I'm interested in the two real big interest, two applications nowadays. So one of them is what people are for some reason they're calling RWA, which I think we need to come up with a better word for that. Basically everything that's not on chain. And then two, basically TradFi, which it's just TradFi. We keep calling it crypto versus TradFi, but I'm talking about securitizing equities using an immutable ledger that is shared. So I think those are the two applications that I'm interested in and hoping to push forward.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you, William. William is the guy I know that with a very great like tech background, but also knows the economy and the regulatory side well as well. He's genius, gold. He's gold. Yeah, he's you guys shall all follow him on Twitter. And I think you also have a community call on like every Tuesday, right? And is it now still on?
Day calls, and I try to bring guests that are building, and maybe not the people that are doing the podcast rounds, but people that are. Basically, I'm working for free for you. So if you've got a new project and you want to evaluate it and you don't mind doing it publicly, we have a community service hour. So that's my community service.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah, I think we can come to that later. Cool. Yeah. Jay, please, brief introduction about yourself.
I'm in Hong Kong, so my career is pretty much in traditional finance. From investment banking to securities, asset management, and now private markets. my entire life. So that's one of the things that we want to get into on private credits for tokenization. Particularly, I think Philip's going to add in more on the, you know, particular project that we are working on. So because the time differences between your region and ours, so now it's like pretty much 10 p.m. in Asia or later. So so today is more like a closed circle discussion with a limited audience. Philip.
Oh, thanks, Jay. Yeah, hi, William. Hey, nice to meet you. Based in Hong Kong as well, I've always been focused on the asset side. Even when I was a PE guy, we looked at, so my specialty is aviation shipping. So I've been still knee deep in this space, and it's, I think, happily that the industry is doing well. Yeah.
You see, Jay and Philip, both of them are from the TroFi side. They have the decades of experience in private debt, on the private credit. Yeah, and we're very interested in those like RWA things, stuffs, and so that's why we have this topic today. And I saw Ave will launch V4 soon that to use RWA as collateral, which is very interesting. So today we're gonna have a discussion around that. And maybe to start with, Philip, can you give a little bit, like a brief introduction of our, how can I say, like how to make RWA as a collateral, but without dig too much into the technical side?
Oh, don't worry, I won't be too technical. So I guess what we're trying to work on is, so in this space, particularly in aviation right now, we are seeing there is a gap that is not being fulfilled by TradeFi, which is the mezzanine debt, which is a junior debt in a way. We see that the value of the asset, generally even in a really the worst case scenario, the volatility is only plus or minus 10%, or mostly minus 10%. So in that case, we feel that there is a space where investor or even traditional or non-traditional investor can get into this space and earn above average profit with asset backing. So in a way, we can package something like this, i.e. Sort of like an ABS structure, but on chain, that can be easily tradable, and as well as providing a more like a stable income to basically any investor. So what we try to do is something that is compared favorably to the traditional ABS, where of course ABS there would be a need for a investment bank arranger, rating agency, and all that. But on chain, we can still achieve that result, but not with the cost. So that is something that we believe that's a space that we can fill the gap. Yeah, I guess to William as well, like, I guess for me, I do want to understand a bit more about how the space is being treated, how would something like this is being received from in the market?
You're saying your specific application?
Yeah, say for example.
Yeah, so can you tell me about some of these specific assets you have and your experience?
So,
like, yeah. Particularly transacting in them?
Yeah, sure. So I've always been a aviation finance guy. I've been working over 10 years on just aviation alone. The asset is very commoditized. We're talking about Airbus, Boeing. The value is very stable, even in the COVID. Honestly, outside of COVID, it's been always been an upward trend. And even during COVID, it was only a minus 10 haircut. So overall, if you're targeting traditional in production model, you are very safe. I'm not talking about narrow body. Sorry, I'm not talking about regional jets. I'm not talking the mega jumbo jets at A380. Without touching those, the variance is very manageable, I would say. And even if that the value going down in a worst case scenario, because you're backed by a lease contract, you basically have a double layer protection.
Can you get a little deeper? So you're talking about assets that are in production, generating revenue for airlines, not for private use?
For owners. Yeah, but well, basically what we're trying to do is we try to bridge the gap between senior debt and the actual volatility, meaning you are facing i.e. the lessee or the airline. If you're in a lessor situation, for example, or say, for example, AerCap, you have AerCap, biggest air leasing company in the world, you can lend to AerCap on top of the senior debt they are getting at the moment, which is around 75-80%. You can get that up to 90% and still be safe. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. Yeah.
Wait, you're trying to go up to 90% loan to value?
Yep, that's right.
All right. So you are having operational risk exposure. So if the airline is going under, you are junior to the debt.
Right.
Okay. So good and bad stuff here, but.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, keep going. Yep.
Yeah, sorry. Of course, what we're trying to do is that you want to target the right asset as well as getting above average return on them. Knowing that, because if you think about it, the aircraft, even if the airline goes default, there's a chance you can repossess it and release it to the next guy. So there is a way out, even if you're going to 90%. And you will probably...
No, I'm not questioning your 90%. I'm just questioning the operational model of RWA on blockchain with liquidation, specifically for the level of your exposure in your tranche.
Oh, okay. Okay, sure.
It might be better if you're a debt holder for an RWA, but that's a hypothesis, and we'll get to that later.
Okay, great. Cool. So I guess after that, yeah, I think anything else you want to know deeper into this structure?
I mean, William, the deal tenor is relatively very short. It's up to 3 years. So it's not like a really 10 years contract we are working with right now.
I love this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
I have a million questions. I love it. I love
Go ahead.
3 years is perfectly fine. I love the asset. I love that it generates revenue from day one. I love that the people that are operating the asset are professional and it's not like a boutique item, because that reduces volatility. I'm sorry, I'm just gonna jump around. There's a very specific mechanic that matters for RWA that I gotta ask you about. How have you, other than taking the asset, leasing it, and making money, what are some of the special situations that you have experienced, you know, effectively a liquidation in your past?
Well, total loss, which would mean an accident, that way the insurance will kick in and compensate whole, everyone, including lender. Basically, you cover 100%, but that means an early repayment, basically.
You've experienced a total loss on one of your assets before?
Oh, yeah. Accidents do happen, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So there's total loss. And I'm just going to say this, but I want you guys to own this space. So some of these questions, I think the answer should be critical to your product. So like saying that you have experienced a total loss and showing out how that has worked and how you've respected your creditors and your owners and all that, and how you've paid out and what the time schedule was, that is a freaking white paper right there. Just explaining that versus, you know, there was a liquidation event this past couple months and everybody got their money back immediately. That's a big difference from there's a physical plane on fire. Like, huge difference. So if you're going to financialize that, you need to explain the answer to this question so that people who buy CryptoPunks understand this answer.
Got it.
Plane crashed on day one. We were notified on day seven. Revenue was stopped. It was no longer a producing asset. The insurance claim was filed. The insurance claim was approved. It was paid out. We were third in line to get paid. It had to be approved here. End result, we were paid on day 75 of X percent. And then we, you know, maybe you guys had to spend time on it. Maybe there's other people that, you know, and then at the end of the day, what is the financial impact for the people who are your holders? So, you know, I'm trying to use general words here, but your investors or your, you know, subscribers or your token holders, whatever it is, it's irrelevant. You just have to explain it. Now, previously, somebody who's buying collateralized debt obligation or, you know, that's very financialized, or an asset-backed security, which is very specific, those people kind of get it. You know, people that buy REITs understand how real estate works. But people that are buying tokens don't know anything. So you have to hold their hand from a token holder to a REIT holder to an ABS holder to a, you know, CDO holder, and you have to kind of basically wrap it up in a bow for them. So that's why I'm asking you the question in a dumb way, but, you know, what is the total financial and time impact for the people who gave you money, getting that money back in all of these scenarios? Scenario A, total loss. Scenario B, taken out of production. Scenario C, the operator does not generate as much revenue, you know, changes in air traffic. Scenario D, you know, they bought too much inventory and they don't want this asset. You know, what if they call you to renegotiate? They have this plane, they don't want to use it because they have other ones. I had this scenario, I live in Philadelphia and we have a lot of trains, and they're shutting down train service, which has an impact on these trains. These trains are leased. This is exactly what you're doing. So, but they have these old trains, and but they just bought a bunch of new ones, so they want to use the new ones, but there's a political reason why they don't want to use the old ones, but they're perfectly fine. But they kind of want to say that they don't work so they can get, that they can trick the government to give them more money to buy new ones. I know this is more BS for government stuff, but we're talking about utilizing a capital asset that has a shelf life of 50 years. This is rolling stock. So you need to demonstrate your experience here, explain this as a white paper, and then make people buy it who are inexperienced in this type of stuff. And your disclosures need to be more of a white paper. You know, disclosures like, you're going to own these houses and we're going to manage them professionally. Okay, great. Right. A white paper is like, guess what happens when somebody doesn't want to use this asset? They still have to pay us, you know, but you have to make it crystal clear. Well, now your exposure is not to them not using the asset because they don't care about the asset. They don't want the asset. They've told you they don't want the asset, but you can't write it down. You know, normally you would write that down, but they don't want to use the asset. Oh, and P.S., so what's your biggest risk? Your biggest risk is they're no longer profitable, because that's really where the money's coming from, is from their profit, not from the use of the asset, because they don't want the asset. These scenarios need to be clearly spelled out, and your experience executing on them is critical to you owning the asset for somebody else.
Okay.
I think the differences between us and other previous deals is just, like, everything's run by professionals, from pre-investment to post-investment, from yearly audit to due diligence. As you said, all the questions, that's part of the due diligence, you know, like whether there's an insurer involved, whether the collaterals are secure, the contract has been checked with the airliners, whether the airlines are a reputable airliner, you know, they do regular maintenance. And also the reason why there's a lot of plane has been changed hands, because like travel still become, I mean, air travel is still a mainstream right now, you know, it's getting more and more busier because it's like getting a lot easier and also cheaper to travel, at least in Asia. So I think that's the uptrend that we're looking at since COVID.
I love it. Yeah, keep going. So can you give me more scenarios of these weird situations you've executed on before?
Well, I mean, like, go ahead.
Please. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I guess the one of the situations that we encounter would be lessees not really fulfilling their lease payment. So there would be some sort of repossession procedure that we would do, engage per party. Of course, there would be security deposit that would cover the period in most cases. And be given the current situation with aircraft being in demand, it's quite easy to find a new lessee in general. So actually, it's the downtime wouldn't be much. The kind of exposed as in without any income, that one for two would be, you know, just quite limited because of the demand generally in the market. So I guess that's one of the few, I guess, downside scenario that we can see in the market. Yeah,
that's great. And you've gone through these before?
Yeah,
when you were junior?
Yeah.
So you were junior on this scenario.
Oh, did you? No, actually, those ones I would say the owner of the aircraft.
Okay.
And the airline would be the operator. Yeah.
Okay, this is good. So you're senior on this, so we want to see it from a junior position.
Okay.
Give me one sec.
Okay. We have a very interesting discussion here because we were discussing the RWA as collateral, and once it's liquidated, and what scenario will we face? This reminds me of like 2 years ago when there is a three arrow Luna crisis, and I see also some other like it's maybe called a private debt. I don't know whether they're called it in this way, but they the underlying assets are actually all tokens. They have nothing relevant to the real world cash flows. So that's how the liquidation scenario triggered the crisis, whole crisis on chain. So
yes.
Now, yeah, so I think it looks like now, if any like liquidation scenario happens, maybe the RWA with the real like cash flow from the real world will be safer.
It's the price is better because the price is better discovered. The price is more, there's more friction on the price because there's actually something behind it and there's fundamentals versus a recursive, a token based on a token based on a token based on a representation of something that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm.
Okay, so let me give you, I want to get deeper into this. This is really good stuff. So you've had the experience of going through a liquidation when you're the owner and then you're working directly with the lessee who's operating. But if you're going to be junior or you're going to have, you know, even non-recourse, you know, based on a contract versus a lien, you are much more junior in this situation. And so let's just step out of the box for 1 second and talk about what is blockchain and how do liquidations work. There's a really simple way to think about this. And again, none of this requires blockchain. We're just talking about a highly liquid market for investing in assets. What you need to have, and we're talking about a leveraged margined account investing in various assets. The only reason we're doing it with blockchain is because people with blockchain are giving us money. That's why we would do these same things on a, you know, on the CBOE or the NASDAQ or whatever. They just didn't give us the tools yet. All right. So here's the atom. This is the atom in the atomic design. The atom is we need to have an asset and we need a way to flip that asset yesterday. That's number one. There needs to be a dollar market for this asset right now. And we are creating, so there's price discovery available for the asset. And two, we need to have all bets be margin. So if you're gonna provide the asset, you're gonna buy the asset and it's gonna be on margin. So if it goes below a certain price, we flip it and you get liquidated. That's the primitive. That primitive works exactly the same for stocks as it does for airplanes. What was the quote? You guys are going to know this book. I'm sorry I'm butchering it. But it was one of the major investment banks got a phone call during the crisis. And the guy called me and said, oh, you know, our margin call is failing. The guy's not answering the phone. They're a very big customer. And then he calls the director. And the director says, liquidate him. And he says, oh, but they're the biggest account. They have, you know, so many billions of dollars. And he says, I'm going to call you back when this margarita is finished and it better be liquidated. I don't know who this quote is. It's a famous, I'm sure you read this book. So you just liquidate. That's the whole point. It's just liquidate. That's the system. Trust the process. It doesn't matter how big your customers, you have to liquidate them. Okay, how does that apply here? Stepping back into the box. We're in the box. Okay, you've got an airplane. You're a junior holder. You could be locked up in a contract. Getting money out of this might require a lawsuit. There's a lot of reasons why this could become a non-performing asset. You need a way to flip that now. How? The easiest way is to have other buyers lined up for your exact position, one-to-one with what you have. So this is dumb, but I'm going to say it. I recommend that if you're going to execute this on blockchain, that you have working capital ready to buy back your own things.
Okay.
So here's how that works. Right now, you've got an asset on the book. You've got one airliner. You got a 737 in operation in the Middle East. And for some reason, this is a non-performing asset. There's risk, the price is moving. Okay, so your obligation is to manage this, great. But you should be able, I don't know if it's legally should be you or somebody that you have contact with, but somebody should be willing to buy this at a fire sale right now. Because guess what? If you're telling me that 90% loan to value is appropriate, you better have a fire sale available at 92%. That's the whole point. That's how fire sales work on blockchain. So fire sale is at 99%. That's why you can liquidate.
That's a very good question. Actually, we thought about this. Adding in reinsurers into the formula is when things non-performing loan happens. then reinsurers will come in and do the job. Or, as you said, we are able to, you know, flip, right? So the asset owner will buy it out. We can also do that in some sense. We can work it out what's the best way to execute this. But whatever we're discussing today, right now, is really rare to happen. It doesn't happen every day, every month, right? So unless something global event happens again, maybe we get shut down and everything. But other than that, I think it's really rare to happen in reality.
Well, I think that if you're on blockchain, the whole point of using these markets on blockchain is the liquidation. That's the whole point of this thing. There's no relationship. There's no negotiation. It is just about the liquidation. So this process has to work. Has to work perfectly and be well-defined. And not only does it have to work, it has to work immediately. So if you can't front load the engineering cost of making this work quickly, then the first liquidation you have, if it takes 30 days to unwind, your product is useless. Why would you reuse your product? Mm. Now, compare this to me. I'm going to make A5. You know, I've got A5 here. Here's how it's supposed to work. Loan to value is, it doesn't matter if it's 90%. Loan to value is X. Fire sale is X plus Y. That's the whole product. It doesn't even matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's a CryptoPunk or a plane or this or that. If I own it, loan to value 90%, and somebody else is ready to buy it at 90, then your marketplace works. And you've got a 2% buffer there. But as soon as it crosses the threshold, bam, you're liquidated. The airline doesn't care. They went from one owner to another owner. Doesn't matter to them.
Right.
And obviously your contract has to be set up properly. You know, you can't be accepting standard terms of loans from your, whatever for the lease agreement. You have to be able to very clearly and orderly switch owners in this scenario.
Right.
Also, if the owner has to own the whole thing, that's less valuable. So now, you know, this discussion we're having hopefully makes your product better. So when you're making an agreement, this sounds dumb for a lease, but I'm going to say it. Your lease might say, okay, this is what's the lease value? How many million for one of these?
Oh, sorry. You mean like the whole lease?
Yeah, just one asset. What's the lease value for one lease?
300,000 per month.
No, what's the total asset value for one of these leases?
I would say 20 million.
20 million, okay. And you got the whole 20?
Yeah, we'll have to become a total 20, yeah.
All right, so let's say that you write the lease agreement like this. You say, okay, we're going to lease you the 20 million, blah, blah, blah. But at our option and to your detriment, at any time, at my liking, I'm allowed to A, take the whole 20 and give it to someone else. They're your new landlord. Or B, shave off 5. I'm going to keep 15. I'm going to lay off 5.
To third party?
Third party, yeah. Same deals.
Okay.
So it's a recursive contract. I know this sounds dumb. It's a new idea. Recursive loan. So you loan at 20. Obviously, it's better than to sign a $20 million loan than four or $5 million loans. But here's the thing. A $20 million loan can only sell to somebody who has $20 million, all right? But a $20 million recursive loan can also sell to somebody who has $5 million. So now your job is to find 5 people that accept a fire sale at 92% loan to value instead of one person who has $20 million at 92%. What's the end result? More liquidity, more fire sales, better liquidation, faster liquidation. So this is, you're now becoming, you're leaving the business of just being a one-stop shop. Now you're a loan aggregator. Guess what? That's what it feels like to be a marketplace. You are actually a loan aggregator. And I'm just saying this, the whole point of your business switches from using 20 million of investment or 20 million of working capital. Now you're going to be 20 million of subscription because you're going to flip these things. You're going to pony up 20 million. You're going to get into the loan. You're going to subscribe it. So you're going to underwrite it. Hopefully you're going to underwrite this. You're going to underwrite it at 20 million and you're going to flip it at 21. And you're going to be a plus $1 million and you're going to do that same thing next week. Bang. So instead of sitting on 20 million or getting 20 million of equity, you're going to float 20 million and you're going to earn 1 million per week.
Hmm.
So that's the business model is a little different. So I want to view like there's a curve, there's a boundary of how your business works. And when you connect into this marketplace, the boundary is a little different. It needs to be more liquid. It needs to be more clear. It needs to be liquidatable. It needs that there's a different relationship between equity and subscribers and the velocity of this money. That's right. What do you think?
Okay.
Great. I mean,
that's absolutely interesting. Yeah.
It's great. I get the fundamentals here. But also, I want you to know we're not looking at single plane here. We're looking at a portfolio of plane that's leasing out to airliners, multiple airliners as well. So, but we do need to set up a strategy, as in when something happens, we need to provide the liquidity right away. I mean, that's the nature of cryptocurrency. I mean, that's the nature of the tokenization here.
So you're telling me you want to tokenize the asset as a whole?
Just like the mezzanine planes? Just the junior loans.
You want to take the junior loans, mezzanine them as a pool, and you want to securitize that?
Tokenize that, yes.
That is not an RWA. You're selling you're selling equity. That's basically a collateralized, asset-backed security. That is very, you're leaving so much money on the table by doing that. That's TradFi. You're just doing TradFi.
Oh, okay. Oh, is that, how would you go about that then?
Oh, you have to split up the planes. The smaller the sizes So one plane is 20 million. Okay, you've got a fleet. Let's say you're, $250 million. You're going to put the whole $250 million mezzanine onto one. I mean, you might as well just list that on the NASDAQ. You're getting nothing out of blockchain. Nobody's going to liquidate that.
But
they're going to liquidate your whole company. I know 20 people that are going to be interested in liquidating your whole company.
Right.
You're saying that if you parcel it out for like one 20 million each would be better in terms of revenue?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. The whole point of the good part of the financial crisis, not the part that happened after. The good part was all the financial engineering that happened to get all the money into the system. That's the phase we're in now. Get the money into the system.
Interesting.
The way that worked was it used to be a REIT was a bunch of houses. Now our REIT has houses and mezzanines and CDOs, even all these different instruments to make this happen. That was the innovation, was splitting these things up and the Moody's game. I mean, all the problems we had with specifically with houses and all the government money that went into it. So I'm not recommending this for these type of houses that government's involved in, because government's going to get screwed and it's going to be a bailout. But for private industry like this, I think you're totally fine. Split it up more. You can make what you can make. Imagine, here's the end game. The end game is you are just a marketplace. You're just flipping these things. There's so much money in the liquidity. You don't have to actually do anything besides have the threat of liquidation, which you're never going to perform, and have all these money coming in and money going out. What you're doing is you're charging for the price discovery, because these things come in as a $20 million loan, but you're parceling them out to people who are nerds. Imagine this, option A, you can go in there and you can buy this as a portfolio, $250 million. Option B, you can buy this specific plane. You can buy this specific tranche of this specific plane, and it's very clear. Guess what's going to happen next? Some nerd is going to use AI, LLMs. They're going to look at every plane. They're looking at weather patterns for every airline, and they're going to figure out which ones are more likely to perform than the other ones, and they're going to bid them up. That's the whole point of this. That's the whole point, is to get these nerds buying and selling these things. You're going to get the fee coming and going, and you're going to make more money on the fees from nerds watching weather patterns of specific airlines than you ever would have made leasing planes. That is the future of tokenized securitization.
So you basically integrate the poly market into this as well.
Yes.
So what you mean is that RWA is about liquidities, leverage on the liquidities. But I remember a few weeks ago, I think we had a brief discussion on the RWA, and you said, correct me if I remember it wrong, you said it's better like someone already invested in the assets and then we tokenize the fund part, not the assets itself. But today seems you have a different
angle. I want you to use the best way to do this. The worst way to do this is to walk in there with a pitch deck, zero asset, and raise money. First of all, this is a primary offering. I don't like that, especially with low liquidity of blockchain. B, there's different rules that apply, which I don't like and are not favorable. So instead, you should do this as a secondary offering. You should have the asset performing before you sell it. That's the whole point. The asset should be performing. So you should be getting lease payments or whatever money somehow you're getting it. And we're talking about leases, but you can also do revenue share. There's other things you can do that are more exciting than the lease, right? You can do rev shares. You can do equity. There's a million ways to structure this, which are so much more sexy than just getting a loan on a plane. How much more sexy is it to get a piece of the action? And it doesn't have to be an equity because there's rules for that. It could be a revenue share. Imagine a smaller airline that can buy a plane on a rev share. How awesome is that? Imagine you could invest, Imagine you could buy tokens on a rev share. That's way more interesting.
I understand where you're coming from, but it also we have to understand the current owner of the assets wants to make the money as well. And of course, they are the insider of the airline business, right? And another thing is that the reason why we have a senior loan, because it's kind of like save us a lot of cost, because it's a lot cheaper. That's why what we're offering is something we think in the industry now is quite sexy in a way. But what you propose is very, very interesting concept. We need to discuss about this.
Some of this is long-term. So some of this is where I think the industry is going to add 10x value. But the only thing that matters today, I'm sorry for sharing too much vision when you're starting a company.
No, that's fine.
The thing you need today is it needs to be very clear how this is different than buying and selling a CryptoPunk. Every way that that's different needs to be explained to a retail investor in very clear terms. And the baseline has to be, I can flip this in under 30 seconds or 15 seconds. That's your baseline. So if you can't do that, you need to explain why they need to trust you before they need to trust you. Don't be like SPF. Oh yeah, no. I'm upside down fifth $8 billion, but trust me, it's gonna work. You know what would have been a million times better is, and he wouldn't be in jail, is SPF is like, look, here's how I'm gonna orderly liquidate this $8 billion and it's not gonna cost me $8 billion. If he had just wrote that up in a white paper, even if you're upside down $8 billion, as long as you have an orderly plan, you're fine. The problem was the recursive trust that was lost when half of that $8 billion was to himself, which was then worthless. That was the problem. It's a complete collapse of trust when there was a disorderly exit. As long as your exit is orderly, that's what I'm saying. You need to explain that. I'm not saying you're a scam. I'm not saying you're whatever. I'm just saying your baseline is liquidating in 15 seconds. So if you can't do that, spell it up front. And then everything you're talking about now works great. And after you've done this plumbing, there's a million ways that you can build the future 10x better than the markets that we have. Oh, and P.S., they work for everything, not just planes.
Right. What if we offering is preference shares instead of junior loan?
That as your only thing, or you're offering junior shares as, preferred shares for, like, which part? For the thing you're getting or the thing you're selling?
For the portfolio of multiple planes.
You're saying you're making a tranche that you're selling, or you're, what do you mean?
We're selling, yeah. Instead of we offering junior loan to the investors, we offering preference shares.
Yes,
The portfolio.
I mean, that's good. It's more options, the better. Yeah.
Okay. That's even better. Yes. So another question on top of that, right? So if the investors willing to buy the preference shares from us, right? As a part owner of the entire portfolio, so can other platform provide say whether leverage or collateralized loans for them? So instead for them to hold on to the asset for the entire tenor, can they do any other financings?
Absolutely, that's another major part of this.
Okay, so let's say we talk to other lending platforms from Web3, and we have a bunch of investors. Like, we're not really targeting retail, like a little, like retail investor. We're targeting professionals including institutions, type of investors. So after that, after a while, I think if they want to do some, you know, borrowing by collateralize the asset they're holding, so that would be great as well, right?
Absolutely.
And how the entire ecosystem works.
Yeah, here's what you're going to do. You're providing an asset that has a real business value and price discovery built in. Okay. You've got the preferred. I don't know if I can call them preferred shares because that's a specific meaning. Maybe we're going to call it a senior instrument, you know, because I don't know if this is really equity and I don't know what rules apply here. So I'm just going to call it a senior instrument. Mm-hmm. So you've got a senior instrument that's financialized and you're going to offer this to some marketplace. Okay. And then they're gonna sell that into the marketplace. Now, the cool thing about it is that there are other people that can come in and buy right away, the fire sale part. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you have a fire sale available and somebody who's ready to buy with price discovery, that means that they can go use credit from everywhere. They can use credit. So what's gonna happen is they're gonna own a Bored Ape. They're gonna collateralize their Bored Ape for Ether. The Ether is swappable for Bitcoin. The Bitcoin is available to buy your shares. Somebody's going to make a fire sale offer for your shares or your whatever's your senior instrument. Okay, those two things combine. Mm-hmm. So the fact that somebody has the Bored Ape and there's liquidity, that means that person can post their Bored Ape. They can stake it to provide backstop to liquidity for your asset, which means people can buy it on debt. They can use Bored Apes without losing them to hold them into their margin account to own your performing asset. And guess what? I would rather earn interest on your lease than not earn interest on my Bored Ape.
Mm-hmm. Just an interesting idea here, right? Just thinking on top of my head. So we also wanted, is it worth for us to run a treasury as well, just to provide the liquidity? Because if you think about it, we have a portfolio of a plane that leasing out to different airlines, very diversified. Right. So if one of the plane has some, you know, defaults or whatever happens, and our treasury can actually finance that like within 15 seconds, like you said, because we are running a very liquid asset behind it as a treasury does, right? Whether it's, you know, treasury bonds or whether it's Ethereum, whether it's other very liquid assets and stable assets, we can actually do that. So we can do it ourselves to provide a liquidity, whether it's market making or liquidity provider. Does it make sense to you? Is there any conflicts if we run that ourselves as well, we're managing the assets?
This is a great question. I'm not qualified to answer this from a legal perspective. And this, you know, market making is an important and regulated thing in different industries. So we need to look in specifically to the market making rules. I'm going to answer from a practical perspective. Either you need to do it or you need to have a arm's length third party person that has pre-committed, staked basically, and we would call this a stalking horse offer. So you're going to have a stalking horse offer ready to go for this, and that they're going to receive value for being the stalking horse. You get a discount. So having a stalking horse, whether it is yourself, we would call that market making. Having a third party arm's length, we would call that a stalking horse, or an auction, which I don't think is really applicable here. You need one of those. And if you don't have one of those, then you have a serious liquidity problem.
I think it's manageable. Like in the traditional finance world, we actually is either we rely on insurers to do that, or we can do it ourselves from, you know, fund management platforms. So, and sometimes let's say real estate, easier to understand, right? If something goes wrong with the rental, whatever, I mean, there's a lot of lenders becomes equity owners. They can buy it out and go through all the legal process later on. It might take two, three months, but they see the value behind it. And it, to them, to buy this thing out is almost like a, you know, asset on discounts, right? Because, you know, as you said, you know, we can manage this behind the scene, but we provide the money for the investor to protecting their principles, basically.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're going to backstop this or underwrite. We would call this underwriting or backstopping. I'm not sure if you're allowed to do this yourself or it has to be arm's length. But I think you need to also consider that there's more scenarios than just the insurance payouts, because you have a different risk profile. If you're doing a lease, your risk profile includes the illiquidity of your customer. Does your insurance cover that, or does your insurance only cover non-performance of the physical asset itself, not the operator? So you should be prepared. Let's just say you have a lease. Okay, so the plane catches on fire. You need to be able to do that. Ideally, you have somebody who can factor the insurance payment. Mm. So the insurance is going to pay, but you want somebody who can factor that and pay you now as a discount of what the expected insurance payment will be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's, we're now factoring. Yeah. Okay, but you need to factor all of the different scenarios. So not plane catches on fire. Plane is disfavored. They buy a different plane. The operator is they receive a fine. They can't operate it. There's a scandal. Mm. They're not allowed to fly that plane. Whatever the reasons are, every one of those needs to have a factoring available. So factor means you get paid now for expected pay flows later. And if you can do that, if you can successfully factor all these things, then you are now an ironclad financial operator. You're no longer a risk operator. Mm. You're a financial operator, which is exactly how the exchanges work. And that's why you're allowed, that's why the nickel market can go upside down and they can unwind trades on the Chicago exchange, is because it is a fully financialized market. You can't go upside down and uncatch a plane on fire. Like, you can't do that, right? But you can do that. You can uncatch a plane on fire if you have a upfront written agreement for factoring the expected future payments of an insurance plan, even if the insurance plan doesn't happen, because you've already factored it and that it's airtight. So if you can financialize this, it's a financial asset, which is way more valuable and liquid.
Right. We understand what you're saying. Philip, is there anything you want to field into to have more clarity here?
Yeah, in terms of insurance, it really depends on how what sort of insurance can be bought. But I think for traditional lease, any accidents will be covered. That is kind of a must for any operator, not just for the financing, but also for their own operation. In terms of not performing, that would be tough to get insurance for,
But we're saying insurance. It doesn't need to be insurance. We're using the word insurance very loosely. So this can be an agreement. You can make a contract with a third party. You can make a poly market. I don't know if there's enough liquidity, but let's say one of your customers is Boeing. You can buy puts on the Boeing, and you can say, okay, I want to get paid if Boeing is in a situation where they could not pay this lease for any reason. Mm. That's insurance. It's just a custom policy. You might have to go to Lloyd's of London to write one of these things, which I totally recommend, but there's different ways to do it. It doesn't have to be quote insurance. Yeah. It can be a market. And then at the end of the day, you're going to write this up as a prospectus and you're going to say, okay, in the situation that the plane catches on fire, we're covered by quote insurance, traditional insurance. If the plane becomes a non-performing asset, we're covered by this. In this scenario, if the operator becomes illiquid, we are covered by that. And you explain these things, and then the implicit thing is, if something happens that's not on one of these scenarios and we can't pay you back, you're fucked. Sorry, you're out of luck, bleep, right? So you have to clearly say under what scenario you're covered and what scenario you're not covered. And hopefully that's a really small scenario.
Mm. Makes sense. Okay. That sounds something different. Something different, yeah.
But think about
it. It's a bit different.
To digest that.
Is it,
I understand,
like the next gen, like investor want to look into, kind of like gaming style finance everything?
Think of how many people are buying tokens that are useless. You're actually generating money. This is why I personally will not endorse you if you're doing primary syndication. I cannot endorse that. I have to trust you. I have to trust the, but if you've already syndicated the money and you're offloading on the secondary market, I can endorse that. Like, that is such a beautiful application here.
It is very interesting ideas that you just, mentioned. We're looking into it. I think that's responsible as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a very highly liquid market, but right.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, William, for your views. I think it's really inspiring. He gave an angle on like how you look at the, maybe it's the future of finance, crypto. Yeah, you have this like, it's a crypto native thinking, I would say, that you think of this designing the system, but from the liquidity perspective. It's really inspiring. Yeah. And this is why we have the Block Central here. We really love to have professionals like William, that you know both sides.
And you guys are in Hong Kong and TradFi. So I'm just going to give you this 1 minute advertisement for not using crypto. Everything I have told you today, everything we discussed, all of your ideas and your operations, you can do it without crypto if you have enough investors who want to trade with each other and you have one Excel file. You can do everything we discussed in Excel. A little more paperwork, a little more administrative cost, but you can do price discovery, liquidations, margin calls, backstopping, fire sales, every one of these things you can do, not automatically, manually in Excel, and you can generate fees and you can be just as successful if you have enough investors. The only thing the blockchain does is it automates all that and it gives you a lot more investors.
You're right. That's the reason why we look into blockchain. It's efficiency, it's transparent. Also, you know,
you can be just as transparent with an Excel file. You can screen share. You can have one person 24/7 share an Excel file. You can be just as liquid. You can automate everything we're doing. In fact, maybe not for you because you're going to work with a partner, but this whole use case, if you have enough money to automate this yourself, do this offline first. Do this in Excel first, automate it first, and then plug in later. You can do blockchain later.
I think you might be misunderstood this. I think Philip is already running a portfolio of airplane leasing, and he's been in the industry for 20 years. It's not a new project that we're looking into.
No, I'm very sorry. I meant some of the future things that we were talking about that require blockchain, like doing individual tranches on individual planes. I'm just saying you can do that today.
Right.
If you really wanted to.
Oh.
And you wanted to charge fees coming and going, and you wanted to very clearly articulate, and you wanted to accept Bitcoin as collateral, you could do that today. You wouldn't want to, but you could build that system.
Right.
I'm just saying you don't need to use blockchain to do that, but you could totally accept Bitcoin and, you know, liquidate them manually on Excel if you wanted to.
Right.
No disrespect.
No. It's fine. We try to understand each other better. We actually just looking to stablecoin for this case instead of other type of current cryptos. So in a way, still in line with, you know, with something very stable. You know, yearly interest receivables. You know, and then but you brought up a few good angles that we need to look into. You know, maybe instead of junior loans, we look into preference shares. Instead of relying on insurers, we can actually flip it. As you said, you know, we have a, you know, emergency funding there to buy the trouble out. But we do look into a portfolio instead of single plane. So,
that's totally fine. And it's a very good business model. And you just have more upside going forward. You got plenty of upside.
Right.
And I love it because you're actually delivering value. Nobody's delivering value. Delivering value. And not just cash. You're delivering cash, but you're actively managing a portfolio. Like, oh my God, God forbid somebody shows up to work and earns their money.
Correct. We are managing real world assets here. You know, it's a real thing. It's not like some ideas, you know, it's a real thing here. And it's been managing by the team for a very long time already, you know. So we're quite excited to innovate this into, convert it into, you know, the Web3 world, or looking to bring them on chain, something different for the investor to look at. Because in a week, 2 weeks ago, there's a lot of, you know, Black Swan event happened again. So people kind of losing it, you know, like we try to provide something valuable, something reliable, something, you know, managed by the professionals. So just giving investor a different option, you know, we're not trying to fight the market or steal the market. We try to give them a different option, a different type of asset that they can see and use. So that's where we are, basically.
I love it. Hit me up offline and, you know, see if I can write a check or get involved or whatever somehow. But, I'm serious. You know, I'm not telling you I'm excited about something and then not writing a check. You know, I'll check things out and I'll ask Serena for your bona fides. But, you know, I want this to work. My mind is where my mouth is. These things need to work. And this is the future that I'm building. This is my vision. This is your vision. We're aligned on what the future is going to look like. And mm-hmm. This got to happen. Like, if we don't do this, it's just going to take more time for someone else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well,
let's make blockchain a better place and also leverage on the blockchain, make the world a better place. Thank you so much, William, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And that's very inspiring. I hope everyone can walk away with something new. And thank you all for your time. And that's all for today's space. And if you like the topics across TrollFi to DeFi, please give a follow to Block Central, and we will host a space like this, inviting professionals from both sides. Have insightful discussion. Right. Okay. Thank you
very much.
Thank you so much. Great to catch up.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a great day and have a good night.
Bye.